Jonathan Gottschall. I have no idea how to pronounce his name, to be honest. But he wrote a book called The Storytelling Animal. And in it, he says that we humans are as a species, addicted to story. He goes on to say, the storytelling mind is allergic to uncertainty, randomness, and coincidence. It is addicted to meaning. He observes that the way that humanity uniquely finds meaning for our lives is by telling stories. And trauma, then, is the disruption of the story that we tell ourselves about ourselves and about the world. It is the disruption of that story by those very things that Gottschall says we're allergic to: uncertainty, randomness, coincidence. It's something unexpected that we can't process. It's the parts of our brain that can construct stories and meaning that are totally overwhelmed when we experience trauma of some sort. Story and meaning seem to our brains to be a luxury when survival is at stake. And so what happens when we experience trauma of some kind is the shattering of our storytelling ability. And the stories that we tell end up with gaps and disruptions and things that don't fit. And so another scholar, Shelley Rambo, who wrote a book called Spirit and Trauma, says, trauma is what does not go away. Suffering is what in time can be integrated into one's understanding of the world. Trauma is what is not integrated in time. And so what makes an experience traumatic is that we are, to some extent, unable to integrate that experience, integrate that story into the greater story that we're telling ourselves. That it doesn't fit into the categories of meaning that we have created in our minds. And so one of the keys to healing and liberation is the ability to tell our stories, in particular the hard stories, to have someone to witness to those stories, and then collaboratively to create a new story that can include the traumatic story itself. And so it's no accident then, I don't think, that at the center of our faith is a story of trauma. A story we tell and witness to every week, the story of the cross. We're going to read a story this morning from the Gospel of Luke. And it may seem strange to have jumped from Genesis 3 to the resurrection, especially during Lent, but I hope you're going to see why we chose this story. It's in Luke chapter 24, verses 13 through 35. It's a story we've looked at many times, but we have a new lens this morning. So hear the words of the Lord. Now, on that same day, two of the disciples were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" Jesus asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it, just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?" Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it is almost evening and the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" That same hour, they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together, who were saying, "The Lord has risen and he has appeared to Simon." Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise be to you, O Christ. And I want to offer you three kind of vignettes of reflection on the story this morning, and hopefully they come together in the end. But the first I'm calling the mixed in between. Because on the road to Emmaus, death and resurrection come together. Susan Bryson, a philosopher, says, "The line between life and death, once so clear and sustaining, now, in the aftermath of trauma, seemed carelessly drawn and easily erased." Shelley Rambo again says, "Life takes on a fundamentally different definition after a traumatic experience. And the tentative and vulnerable quality of life in the aftermath means that it is life always mixed with death." Life always mixed with death. In light of the cross, the disciples' lives will never be the same. Because even though Jesus was the one who died, the disciples also experience a death of sorts. Their story has been disrupted. Their hopes and dreams have been crushed. As we mature, our stories must mature with us. And so we can lament the loss of innocence. And the loss of innocence is always something that's connected to some hard thing, maybe a traumatic thing even. But that aside, the stories that we then tell must be able to include death and life, beauty and ugliness, suffering and joy. The stories we tell ourselves must be able to include comprehensiveness, the realities of the world. Christians, unfortunately, often tell very simplistic and linear stories. We might say, tell stories like, "Well, life in the world is bad, but life in heaven is perfect and good." Or maybe you've heard this story from someone, that "Before I was a Christian, my life was just terrible. And then I met Jesus and my life was great." Anyone ever heard that story? These are incomplete stories. Life is always mixed with death to some degree, post-Genesis 3 and the fall. There's always a mixture. And what we have on the Emmaus Road is resurrection actually witnessing to crucifixion. Picture this scene. The disciples are telling the story of the crucified one to the risen one. Like, there is this encounter, there is this bringing together of life and death in this moment. And you'll notice that as the disciples tell this story to Jesus about Jesus' own death, he doesn't jump to resurrection. He doesn't say, oh, hey, don't worry about it, I'm alive, does he? He says, it's part of the story. Verse 26 and 27, he says, was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory? And then beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. The story of the scriptures that include suffering and death. And so, for Christians, our stories have to and have, from the beginning, have this kind of overlap. In Revelation, we have this picture of the Lamb on the throne who was slain. Right? So you have the risen Christ, but there's still this image of the cross there. Paul talks about carrying in his body the death of Christ so that life can be lived in others. There's a mixture of death and life in this story. The church, then, must tell a mature story. A story in which there is space for the mixed in-between so that people can tell honest stories about themselves and know that God is there. If we tell simplistic stories, you have people who come in here and they're like, wait a second, my life doesn't fit in this. The messiness, the complexity of my life just doesn't fit in this whole story. And if we're honest, it doesn't fit our own stories either. So the church must tell these stories of this kind of mixed in-between of the gospel, where life and death exist together, simultaneously. Second movement is called Surplus and the Beyond. Shelley Rambo writes, trauma is the suffering that does not go away. What happens in our brains, as we've talked about, they're wired for survival. And in this traumatic experience, our brains become unable to process what's happening to us properly. If we look at brain scans of people who are experiencing trauma, there's ways they do this. What happens is the parts of our brain that are concerned with our survival, our limbic system and our brainstem, they light up, and what shuts down are the parts that can put these pieces together into a story. All of our energy goes into surviving. But what happens is we have all these pieces of this story that can't be integrated into our story, and so they go other places. We don't lose them. They're not there. They find somewhere else to latch on. So they might show up, as we'll talk about next week, in our bodies in some way. They might come to us in flashes of images or in inexplicable periods of depression or strange aversions to certain places or activities. They might come out in surprising bursts of anger or in startling reactions to a touch or sound or smell, in a nagging mistrust of others, in a compulsive drive to succeed, or in self-sabotage when a relationship gets too intimate or happiness is finally within reach. Trauma and these stories that we can't fit into our greater story, they always find some place to live. And all of these little snippets kind of exist in our lives without any story to attach them to. It's almost like you're in a room that's filled with light, but you look around and there's no windows and there's no lamps, there's no other source. It's just there somehow, and that's kind of what trauma is. It exists there, but we don't have it tied to the source. It's something that is beyond our stories. We all have a story that we tell, all of us here at some level, about Jesus too, and about faith, and about who we are. And trauma often shatters those stories. We might tell a story about Jesus being a loving and protecting friend, and then we experience something traumatic and painful and ask, well, where was he in that? We might tell a story about sin and forgiveness, and then we experience trauma, and neither of these categories seem sufficient. There's more there than can fit into that story. I can't just forgive this. Or maybe we tell a story where, you know, good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people. That's how it is. And then experience a trauma. It's like, well, what do I do with that? Jörg Reiger is a theologian, and he talks about something called Christological surplus. And this is what we need in these moments. What he says is that Christ is always out beyond the stories that we tell about him. Christ is always more and beyond the boxes that we put him in. He's always beyond the systems that we create and the institutions and the theologies and all the things we think we understand. Christ is always in surplus of those. Christ is always more. Christ is always all, and so Christ then is already out there in the beyond of what our minds can grasp and beyond what fits into our stories. And so what we have then is that trauma is what is beyond what fits our stories. And Christ is beyond what fits our stories. And the good news there is that no matter what happens to you, whether you can make sense of it or not, whether it seems to fit or not, that Christ is always already there in that uncomfortable place outside of what we know and can understand and can grasp. The cross reveals that Christ is already there when our stories shatter in the beyond. And now I'm not glorifying trauma here, but somehow in the redemptive brilliance of God, trauma, and when we face that trauma, can actually draw us into new dimensions of the Christ experience. Because it forces us out into new territory where Christ is in surplus. And that's how the cross functions in the narrative that we're reading this morning. The cross is a rupture in the disciples' Messiah story. The cross is the beyond that just doesn't fit that story they were telling. So we go back to the disciples on the road, and what we notice is that they're talking about Jesus' crucifixion as if it is in contrast to or evidence against their hope that he was the Messiah. They say it this way. They say, "And how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him, but we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel." The cross is the completely unexpected and beyond that doesn't fit into anyone's stories. And yet, the church for millennia now has been diving into the surplus and grappling with this idea of a crucified God, a divine sufferer, with the cross as the ultimate revelation of love, even of divine glory. These are categories that no one had for a Messiah or for the hope of the world or anything. We would never come up with that story. And yet, as cross comes into this hope, we're drawn into a new truth, a greater story. And so between the traumatic story of the cross that we witness to as Christians, and when we are able to witness to our own traumatic stories and the traumatic stories of others, we are drawn into the surplus of Christ. We're drawn into the more of God. We're drawn into the beyond of the divine story. Finally, the last movement that I'm calling the whole story. Hopefully this brings some of these pieces together. We've noticed how Jesus, after he's witnessed to their story, after he's witnessed to their pain and their sorrow, Jesus retells the story. He goes back to the scriptures, and beginning with Moses and all the prophets, interprets to them all the things about himself in all the scriptures. And as he retells the story, he finds a place for the cross. He includes this traumatic moment in this greater story. Jesus says, as clearly as he could say it to the disciples, that the cross somehow, some way, belongs in this story. And at the same time, it's not the whole story. The story is creation and liberation and water from rocks and manna from heaven in the wilderness and incarnation and healing and, yes, the cross and resurrection and Pentecost and the new heavens and the new earth. He puts it in its place within the grander story. Part of trauma and the fact that we can't fit it into our stories is that our brain experiences traumatic event, the traumatic event in the present. Some of you may have experienced this. Some of you may have seen or known people who've experienced this. What happens for people who have experienced deep trauma is when they're kind of told that story back, their brains actually act like it's happening to them right now. Trauma hijacks our present reality and being able to be present in this moment. Unless trauma is integrated into its rightful place in our stories, it will take the leading role in our story without our awareness even. But with help, we can go into the beyond and tell the story and witness to the grander story of our lives, the grander story of the world in which we live. The story of the cross, then, helps us to put trauma, our trauma, in its proper place. And incidentally, that place is not just, oh, this thing happened in the past, so let's move on and forget about it. That's not the point. Its proper place is alongside our creation blessing and resurrection glory. Alongside the joys comes that trauma. It's still part of us, but in its proper place. It doesn't dominate. The cross is the grand cosmic trauma that absorbs and acknowledges and includes and even sanctifies all suffering and corruption and injustice and death. And what's key to the cross is that God has actually received this. This is hard to comprehend. God has actually received trauma into his story. To proclaim the cross and the crucified one is to say that my trauma and your trauma, my pain and your pain, my weakness and your weakness have a place in the divine cosmic drama. Listen to what Paul says. In Romans 6, 5, the death he died once and for all, but the life he lives to God. That Jesus' death kind of absorbs all the deaths of our human stories so that we can also find life in God. Or he writes in Philippians 3, he says, I want to know Christ. right? We all do. I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection, great, and participation in his sufferings. I want to know Christ by becoming like him in his death, and so somehow attaining to the resurrection from the dead. Paul says to know Christ is to experience the fullness of our humanity because Christ has experienced the fullness of our humanity. And so, friends, the reality is that your trauma and my trauma will always be a part of our stories. Trauma cannot be ultimately forgotten or denied. It's there. Jesus, too, eternally bears the wounds of the cross. Even the risen Christ shows his disciples the wounds in his hands and in his side. Jesus eternally bears the title of the Lamb who was slain. The cross will always be a part of Jesus' story. Christ is the eternally incarnate God who takes on human life from now and forever. He's the eternally crucified one, the lamb slain for the sins of the world, and the eternally risen one who reigns in love forever and ever. All of these are forever a part of Jesus' story. And so we as Christians then must witness to the Jesus story, not just as something that happened, or even the cross as something that was done for us. Not only that, but as my story. Jesus is living my story. Jesus is living the story of humanity and merging it with the divine story of love. And when we witness the story of Jesus in that way, all of those floating and unintegrated pieces that don't find, begin to find a place in our stories. And so, like Paul writes, as we are united with him in his death, through our deaths and through our traumas, we can join in Paul's certainty of being united with him in a resurrection like his. That's our story. That's Christ's story. Amen.